Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the latest edition of the Saturday morning wake-up call. I figure, why wait to the NFL Week 17 picks to get it started? We're going to kick right off talking about the NFL. There are a lot of possibilities, of course, still to be decided in a Week 17, this final weekend, in terms of the regular season of NFL football. It's amazing how fast this thing goes by, the season goes by. You have 18 teams who are still alive, who are either in the playoffs or still alive for a playoff spot. 18 out of 32 teams. That's the way NFL wants it. They want parity. They want to be unpredictable. That's why you got the salary cap. That's why you got some revenue sharing, the whole nine yards. And, you know, there are some teams, not only there are some playoff spots on the line, there are some coaches' jobs on the line. I'm just going to keep it very simple as far as these playoff spots, as far as these scenarios in terms of these playoff spots. To get into every tiebreaker and every particular scenario, it'd take 20 of these shows to do that. In the AFC, you have Miami, Baltimore, Denver, and San Diego, all teams that control their destiny. Any one of those teams wins tomorrow, either one of those teams wins tomorrow, they're in the playoffs, clear cut and dry. Teams that need some help, you have the Jets, who have just fallen off the map, and you have New England, which amazingly, and this shows you just how crazy the NFL has been this year, New England can finish 11-5 and be out of playoffs. If Miami wins, New England's out. I mean, that's all it is to it. So they can be 11-5 and be out of the playoffs, which would, it wouldn't be fair, but that's just the way it is. In the AFC, Minnesota and Dallas control their own destiny, win, and they're in. Philly, Chicago, Tampa all need help. Philly needs a lot of help. Philly and Chicago need a lot of help. Both Philly and Chicago need two teams, need to win their particular games and have two other teams lose. And have a combination of two other teams lose. Again, there are some jobs that are on the line. You have, I don't care what Jerry Jones says, Wade Phillips, if he doesn't win tomorrow, he's gone. I don't care what Jerry Jones says. I cannot see Wade Phillips being the coach of this team. You remember, this team's coming off a year, 2007, where he had 13 Pro Bowlers. Gets Pac-Man Jones. He gets Tank Johnson. He signs Roy Williams, who becomes the latest Cowboy receiver to whine and moan about not receiving the ball. You know, welcome to, there's a long line for that. For that one. If he doesn't win a chance, they don't get to the playoffs. He's gone. I don't care. The voter confidence to me in sports, and you should know this in all you sports fans, years of watching sports, the voter confidence means nothing in sports. Come on. Oh, he's our guy. We love him. Be back next year. 10 minutes later, we're making a change. We're going in a different direction. It means absolutely zero in sports, especially in professional football. NFL is a now league. It's about winning now. It's not about 3 years down the road. It's not about the five-year plan. It's either win now or there's a chance that you can lose your job. And last time I checked, Wade Phillips did not have any Super Bowl rings on his finger that he's won. Minnesota, Brad Childress, another guy that could be gone. You know, how much money did Minnesota spend in the offseason in terms of free agents and that big trade, the big trade they had made to get Jared Allen, trading the first round pick to get him. I can see a scenario if he doesn't make the playoffs, then he could be out, especially in that division. I mean, that division, the NFC North, has been awful this year. You certainly can add Eric Mangini to that list as well. New York Jets spend a ton of money on free agents Faneca. They get Brett Favre. You know, they shoot up the offensive line. They got off to a quick start. You know, 6 weeks ago, the Jets looked like the team to beat in the AFC, coming off those big wins, going back to back against New England and Tennessee. Now the Jets look like they can't get out of their own way. And I'm telling you right now, and I was just up in that New Jersey area, up in the New Jersey, Pennsylvania area. The talk that I heard from sports talk shows in New York, newspapers. This is a win. This is a either win or go home scenario for Eric Mangini. He doesn't win this. Now the Jets could win and not make the playoffs. You know, if Miami wins, if New England wins, the Jets are out. They can win and not make the playoffs. But if Mangini doesn't win this game, chances are he's going to be gone. And you look at Mangini's record. Mangini, you know, had a good first year, made the playoffs, lost to New England, was bad last year. This year is still 9-6, which is not great, which is not terrible. But when you consider the fact that that division was up for grabs. You know, when Tom Brady hurts his knee on that first series of the season for New England, then all bets were off. I mean, you had Tom Brady out for the season. You have a Miami team that was coming off a one-win season last year. That looked like it was the Jets' division to lose. You had a Buffalo team who a lot of people liked, but people were still kind of didn't know what direction they were headed in. Didn't know if they were going to be a big time team or were they going to struggle. You know, so the Jets, there's no excuse for the Jets not to win that division. I mean, for the Jets not to win that division would warrant Mangini to get fired. Especially when you have coaches like Mike Holmgren, who will coach his last game this Sunday with Seattle, and Bill Cowher, who's been in the CBS studios the last couple of years. Who's going to be out there? Bill Cowher will coach next year somewhere. You don't know where. Whether it be Cleveland or somewhere else, he's going to coach. So, again, Eric Mangini is coaching for his job without no doubt. So there are a lot of scenarios in the NFL. Again, we're just a week away from the playoffs. 18 of 32 teams are still alive. I mean, normally you would see that number and say week 15, week 16, week 14, but this is the last week of the NFL season, and you have more than half the league with the opportunity to make the playoffs, which is unbelievable. A lot of people don't like that scenario. A lot of people like the dominant team and like things to already be, decided. Hey, what's wrong with a little excitement in the NFL? I mean, it's the polar opposite of baseball, I'll tell you that much. Excuse me, it's the polar opposite of the NBA, where from year to year you know who the teams are, who are the main title contenders are going to be for the most part. But that's the way the NFL wants it. They're certainly getting their wish. Another scenario to bring up, the Carolina Panthers have a chance to either finish in second or as low as the fifth seed. If Carolina loses to New Orleans, which is certainly possible, and Atlanta wins, then Atlanta clinches that division, that NFC South division, and Carolina would drop to the number five spot, which is a big deal because then Carolina is playing next week instead of getting the bye week. They're getting that first week off, which is important. I mean, you want that week off to keep your players fresh. It's always been a major advantage for teams having that week off, especially in the AFC. AFC, you've seen more upsets in the divisional round, but the NFC, for the most part, Dallas was the exception last year, losing to the Giants. Normally, the division winners and those first two seeds. Take care of business in that divisional round. So a very big game for the Carolina Panthers down in New Orleans for them to try to hold on to that number two spot and have a bye week and have the first round off in the AFC playoffs. Coming up on this final edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call for 2008, that is, not the final edition ever, We'll have NFL picks. We'll have Star of the Week. We'll have the final regular season edition of Inside the Burgundy and Gold. Good week for the Redskins last week. Too bad they're not making the playoffs, but they made their own beds. Now they have to lay in it. And we'll also have NBA Beat and we'll have Star of the Year. Not Star of the Week this year. Not Star of the Week, Star of the Year. And we'll also look back at some top stories and much, much more. That's coming up on a Saturday morning wake-up call. The number is 347-215-6180. 347-215-6180. Chime in. You know, we'll have a do a lot of NFL. We'll get to some NBA. Obviously, a big day in terms of the Christmas Day matchups. Too many for my liking, but we'll get to that and much, much more on the Saturday morning wake-up call. Here's the update. Randy Johnson has signed a one-year deal with the San Francisco Giants. The 45-year-old left-hander is just five wins away from 300 career victories. Florida Atlantic defeat Central Michigan 24-21 in the Motor City Bowl. You have three other bowl games that will take place today. West Virginia takes on North Carolina in the Meineke Car Care Bowl. Wisconsin takes on Florida State in the Champs Sports Bowl. And Miami will take on California in the Emerald Bowl. Jerry Jones has said that both Wade Phillips and Jason Garrett will remain as head and assistant coaches, offensive coordinators for the 2009 season. Again, I believe it when I see it. NBA scores. Golden State upsets Boston 99-89. Boston loses his second straight game to drop to 27-4. Steven Jackson leads Golden State with 28 points. Miami defeats Chicago 90-77. Dwayne Wade leads Miami with 28 points. New Orleans snaps its two games losing streak to win, defeating Houston 88-79. Chris Paul leads the way for the Hornets with 26 points and 10 assists. Other winners in the association: Memphis, Detroit, Minnesota, Utah, Denver, Toronto, and Charlotte. Again, the phone number is 347-215-6180. 347-215-6180. On the Saturday morning wake-up call. Coming up, the final regular season edition of Week of NFL Picks. That will be coming up on the Saturday morning wake-up call. And, of course, you will have a lot of big games in terms of these picks. I mean, there are a lot of games with major playoff implications in the NFL. You have teams who... Week 17, the NFL picks a little different flavor in terms of the opening, and it is revenge for some of these teams. There are some teams who had earlier losses to their particular opponents who could very easily spoil another opponent's chance to make the playoffs. And we will begin in Orchard Park, New York, where the Buffalo Bills take on the New England Patriots, and the Buffalo Bills, who lost to the Patriots earlier this season in embarrassing fashion, I might add, try to deny the Patriots a playoff berth go figure. I mean, nobody in their right mind thought, me included, that the Patriots had any shot whatsoever with Tom Brady going down at the beginning of the season of coming even close to making the playoffs, despite the soft schedule. But here they stand at 10-5. Patriots come into this game 6.5-point favorites at 10-5. Matt Castle, who's made a ton of money for himself, continues to play well. The Patriots are the second highest scoring team in all of football behind the New York Giants. They've been putting on. They've been scoring a ton of points lately. They've had three games where they scored over 40 points. And listen, you can say what you want about Bill Belichick. You can call him a cheater. He is a cheater from Spygate last season. But this coaching job, this has been his by far and away his best coaching job. Not only Matt Castle coming in for Tom Brady, but you know Noah Delius Thomas. No, Rodney Harrison. They've had a bunch of run. They have rotated running backs throughout the season. They have a bunch of injured running backs over the course of the season. But they find a way. They find a way to get the job done. And they go into Buffalo, like I said, 6.5-point favorites. I can see Buffalo coming out there. Trent Edwards played well last week and playing a good game and putting up a fight. There's no way in the world with a playoff spot on the line. There's no way the Patriots are losing this game. I just can't see it. Again, Buffalo has played well. Did play well last week, but they've been very inconsistent for the majority of the season. New England, you really think about it, and their losses, they really haven't had any bad losses. They lost to Pittsburgh. They lost that heartbreaker against the Jets when the Jets were playing well. They haven't lost to mediocre teams this year. They've knocked around San Francisco, St. Louis, Seattle. They defeated. They haven't lost to bad teams. And I think Buffalo is a bad team. So I expect New England to win. Maybe this game is closer than what many would think it would be. Maybe it's 27-21. Maybe 31-24, 31-23, but expect New England to come out on top. Game number two, my upset special number one. Carolina travels down to the Bayou to take on the New Orleans Saints. New Orleans, which is playing for nothing, but maybe Drew Brees is breaking NFL passing record as far as passing yards for. For an NFL season, Drew Brees is trying to break Dan Marino's record. That might be the only motivation that New Orleans has. Again, this is one of these revenge games. New Orleans lost to Carolina earlier in the season, and they try to return the favor. New Orleans, again, is the highest scoring team. I said the Giants are the highest scoring team. Actually, New Orleans is the highest scoring team in the NFL this season. They scored a ton of points. Brees has been great despite really a banged up receiving corps and just. It's fighting no running game with Reggie Bush being injured throughout the course of the season. Brees has played great. I'm not in love with Carolina. I know they played well against the Giants, but they did give up 300 yards rushing in that game. They played well. I cannot take that away. They played well, but I'm still not completely sold. New Orleans has been great all year at home. They've been a completely different team at home as in comparison to where they played, how they played on the road. I like New Orleans in this game. I think this will be a high-scoring game. I'm not in love with neither one of these teams' defense. Carolina's defense is not a championship-level defense. There are a lot of people who believe that Carolina, if they were to get the chance, could take out the Giants in the Meadowlands. I don't see it, even if they were to get the opportunity again. Again, they don't play championship-level defense. Especially that run defense is very soft. Their top defensive tackle is going to be out for the rest of the season. I like New Orleans in this game, 38-31, 35-31, that type of score. There will be a lot of points put on the board. Carolina's running game is as good as any running game in the league. D'Angelo Williams and Jonathan Stewart are tremendous as a twosome. I expect them to have big games, but I expect Drew Brees to be a little bit too much for the Carolina Panthers. For the Carolina Panthers, I like the Saints to win that, to upset the Panthers. New York. We travel down to the Meadowlands with the Miami Dolphins, who have really been the story of the year. I understand Matt Ryan's been great, considering what Atlanta went through with Michael Vick, the coach, Petrino, quitting on him. But the Miami Dolphins, to me, have been the story. You're talking about a team last year that was just dead in the water, 1-15. A lot of people thought that they were going to go 0-16. They were able to get the one win against Baltimore out of all teams. And maybe it's me, but it seems to me that everybody is on the Jets to win this game. Brett Favre, all of a sudden, who's been playing like garbage for the past 5-6 games. He's all of a sudden going to find, refine the magic, going to have a big game, and, you know, the Dolphins are not going to be able to handle the pressure of the New York crowd. I don't buy it. I don't see it. I think the Dolphins are playing as well as any team in the AFC right now coming down the stretch. This team, you know, Chad Pennington has done more than just manage the game. He's making plays. He's been a better quarterback than Brett Favre this year, I'll tell you that much. But, I mean, how bad has Brett Favre been? 21 touchdowns, 19 interceptions. You know, he's talking this retirement talk now. He's just going to retire already. I mean, Pennington has been great. I think Miami wins this game. I think the game will be very close. I could see Miami winning, you know, 24-21. 24-20, that type of game. But I like Miami in this game. I think they're playing, they are by far playing the best ball out of these two teams. And obviously, I think the Jets blew the opportunity. You know, when you can't beat Oakland, Seattle, San Francisco, you frankly don't deserve to make the playoffs. I mean, I know that, you know, I'm not going to get on them about the San Diego loss, considering how talented San Diego is, but there's no way you can consider yourself a playoff team and lose to San Francisco, Seattle, and Oakland. You got to beat at least two of those teams. One of those losing one of those games, maybe I could accept, but losing all three of those games, you're not a playoff team. And I expect the Jets to go down. I expect Eric Mangini to be looking to be on the unemployment line come Monday morning. Game of the week number one, Dallas travels down to the city of brotherly love, where they certainly will not get any love from those Philly fans, as Dallas will take on the Philadelphia Eagles in an absolute elimination game. Now, the Eagles can win this game and still not make the playoffs, and the Eagles will know. By the time this game is played, this game is a 4 o'clock game. By the time this game is played, they will know whether or not they will be in the playoffs. You wonder how much that will affect their motivation. I don't think it will. Andy Reid's teams, even when they've been eliminated from the playoffs in previous years, always play well in these tight games. A couple of years ago, they had no Brian Westbrook, no Donovan McNabb, yet they played the Redskins right down to the last couple of minutes. And back in 2005, the Redskins went on to win that game. But again, they're going to play hard regardless of what the situation is. This is a very tough game to pick. I mean, this game, I was going back and forth all week on this game. Both these teams are playoff caliber teams. Both these teams basically right now are evenly matched. The one thing I will say is don't expect to see the shootout that we saw back in week two when it was probably the most exciting game of the NFL season. Dallas winning 41-37. Of course, that was the Deshaun Jackson faux pas where he, you know, tosses the ball before he crosses the end zone, and you know Philadelphia ended up scoring a touchdown a couple plays later. But that was one of the best games of all of the year in terms of the NFL. This game will be a defensive game. Both the defenses are playing well. The Dallas defense is playing well in spite of what happened against Baltimore over the last two possessions in those. Where you had those 82-yard run, the 77-yard run by McGahey and McClain. And the Philadelphia defense, and you look up, is ranked number 3 in the NFL in total defense, ranked in the top 4 in scoring defense as well. They've played well all season long. I expected it to be a close game. Again, if this game was in Dallas, I would like Dallas, but it's in Philadelphia, so I like the Eagles to win a 20-17 type game. This will be a defensive game, no question. There's no question in my mind. I wonder if Dallas will be able to run against that Philly defense. That could be the difference. And, you know, Tony Romo is Brett Favre-like, and he's prone to throwing some interceptions. Game of the week, number 2, and, you know, it's funny how the NFL season comes in full circle. You know, this was one of the better games of the year in week 2, where you had Denver and San Diego. Everybody remembers, of course, the Ed Hockley call, where he should have called the fumble on Jay Cutler, a fumble that San Diego ended up recovering, but he didn't. He didn't call a fumble. He ruled it a fumble, but didn't whistle the play dead. So the only thing that happened is Denver ended up losing some yardage on the play. It was one of the worst calls that you'll ever see, but Hockley you know, owned up to it, admitted to his mistake. He's still one of the best officials in the league. And there you win. San Diego has taken San Diego basically 15 weeks to recover from that call. Now they got themselves in a position where if they win this game, this is an all or nothing game for San Diego and Denver. The winner gets in the playoffs and wins the division, and the loser goes home. It's just that simple. How the world Denver got themselves to this point is amazing to me. Despite the fact that they've been inconsistent all season long, they had a three-game lead 3 weeks ago. They were at 8-5. San Diego was 5-8 with a game at hand, and now they find themselves playing for their playoff lives. Mike Shanahan is not one of these names that's on the hot seat. That's what two Super Bowl rings will do for you. But this would be one of the great collapses that I've seen in recent NFL memory if Denver is to lose this game. And I don't believe that Denver can come into San Diego and beat San Diego, considering how the Chargers are playing right now. Phillip Rivers has been great. I don't see how in the world he did not get voted into the Pro Bowl. It shows you how much credence that the Pro Bowl has based on that fact. The guy's the number one rated quarterback in the league, okay? And he's not on the Pro Bowl team. I like San Diego in this game. I said it a few weeks back, and if it ever got to this point that there was no way in the world, no way that San Diego was ever going to lose this game to Denver. You know the story. Cutler and Phillip Rivers can't stand each other. Phillip Rivers was barking at Jay Cutler last year when San Diego in the season finale last year when San Diego defeated Denver. San Diego has had its way with Denver in San Diego of late. And San Diego's playing well. I mean, San Diego is a team, I'm telling you right now, if they get into the playoffs, even as an 8-8 team, I'm not big on 8-8 teams doing anything in the playoffs, but San Diego can be dangerous. They have a lot of talent offensively. Their defense is playing better. And they have the hot quarterback. I mean, Phillip Rivers has played great over the course of this three-game winning streak that San Diego has been on since they were started out at 4-8. Denver is a joke. I mean, how can you take Denver serious after losing some of the games that they lost? If you can't beat Buffalo at home with the division and the playoffs on the line, then you don't deserve to make the playoffs, and you're really not a playoff team. You thought Denver had gotten themselves together when they beat Atlanta and when they went to New York and beat the Jets, but they have taken 10 steps back, and I look for San Diego to knock Denver out and finish with that division title and that playoff spot. And how crazy is it? San Diego, with an 8-8 record, if they were to win this game, is going to host a playoff game. I mean, that's how it is. Go figure that. You could have an 8-8 San Diego in the playoffs and an 11-5 New England Patriots team sitting at home. I mean, that's how crazy the NFL has been. So here you go. My bonus pick. I have a bonus pick. Detroit travels down to Lambeau Field to take on the Green Bay Packers. And I'm picking, I'm picking the Lions. I may not believe it. The Lions, as you know, are 0-15. They're trying to become the first, they're trying to avoid becoming the first team to lose all their games. You have to go back to 1976, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who only lost 14, who were 0-14. Detroit would be the first 0-16 team in NFL history. And come on, Lions. I mean, do something. I mean, you can't go 0-16. You can't go 0-16. And then, frankly, they're catching the Packers at the right time. The Packers have nothing to play for. The Packers have not played well this year. Defense has been bad. Aaron Rodgers has been pretty good, but not great. They really don't have a strong running game. I mean, come on, the Lions, you got to win. You can't lose this game. You cannot lose the game. And, boy, if you're the Packers, you're Mike McCarthy. You ever lose it. I'm not saying his job will be in a hot seat, but you ever lose to an 0-15 Lion team. That would not look good. So hopefully the Lions can take care of business. I mean, Detroit needs something. You got GM plants, shutting down left and right in the car situation. I mean, nobody cares about the Red Wings. The Pistons aren't any good this year. Give the people of Detroit something to cheer about. If you're the Lions, but I have New England New England, New Orleans, Miami, Philadelphia, San Diego, and the Detroit Lions, all in week 17, the final weekend of NFL football, regular season football before the playoffs. Hopefully Detroit can take care of business, I mean, because you would hate to see a team go 0-16. Coming up, still to come on the Saturday morning wake-up call, we have the Burgundy, inside the Burgundy and Gold, our star of the year, the NBA beat, and much, much more. The phone number, the call number is 347-215-6180. Again, 347-215-6180 on the Saturday morning wake-up call. After the update, we will have inside the Burgundy and Gold. So stay tuned to that on the Saturday morning wake-up call. Randy Johnson has signed a one-year deal with the San Francisco Giants. Johnson, the 45-year-old left-hander, is just 5 wins away from achieving a milestone of 300 wins. He joins a rotation course of Tim Lincecum, Noah Lowry, and also Barry Zito to go along with Matt Cain as well. Florida Atlantic defeats Central Michigan 24-21 in the Motor City Bowl. 3 other bowl games today. You have West Virginia taking on UNC in the Mikey Car Care Bowl. You have Wisconsin taking on Florida State in the Chance Sports Bowl. Miami takes on California in the Emerald Bowl. Jerry Jones has said that both Jason Wade Phillips and Jason Garrett will be back in 2009 as head coach and offensive coordinator, respectively. That remains to be seen. Late NBA action. Golden State upsets Boston 99-87. Boston falls to 27-4. Steven Jackson goes for 28 points to lead the way for Golden State. Miami defeats Chicago 90-77. Dwayne Wade scores 28 points. New Orleans snaps his 2-game losing streak to defeat Houston 88-79. Chris Paul goes for 26-10. Other winners in the association include Memphis, Detroit, Minnesota, Utah, Denver, Toronto, and Charlotte. I know it was a little overkill, but hey, wins have been scarce, few and far between for the Washington Redskins. The Redskins finally snap that losing streak and get back on the winning track as they defeat the Philadelphia Eagles 10-3 in a game that was not the prettiest game to watch by any stretch of the imagination. A game where Jim Zorn probably saved his job. I would be shocked, even for the Redskins, even considering that Daniel Snyder goes through coaches like we go through, you know, T-shirts. I'd be shocked if Jim Zorn is not the head coach of the Washington Redskins come 2009. And again, nothing new as far as how the Redskins won the game. I mean, you saw great defense and bad offense. And that has been the theme for the Washington Redskins for the majority of the season. The defense comes up big, shutting down Donovan McNabb and the rest of that Philadelphia Eagle offense. And, you know, listen, you know, the thing that you liked about the game, if you're a Redskins fan, is the fact that the team did not compete hard, did not quit on Zorn. They played hard for Zorn. Like I said last week, you know, if you want to talk all this talk about, you know, that, you know, it's not coach's fault, he's doing a good job, and we players make plays, coaches don't, and Rod and blase, blah, and so on and so on. Go out there and win the game. Go out there and play hard. Don't get embarrassed. So the Redskins, London Fletcher leading the way, and the secondary was played great leading the way, absolutely shut down the Eagle offense. They had a little help from Deshaun Jackson and the rest of those Eagle receivers. I mean, how many passes the Eagles dropped that could have been touchdowns or big plays? Regardless of that, they stopped the Eagles from shut down the Eagles' running game and were able to put the Eagles in a tough spot, in an almost impossible spot this week in terms of making the playoffs as they win 10-3. And I'll tell you right now, I've never in my life, in all the years I've been watching the Redskins play, have been less into a game than I was last week into that game, when watching that game. I just wasn't into it. And there have been years, trust me, over the course of the last decade where the Redskins have been out of it in terms of making the playoffs, like before week 16. They've been out of it in some years. Redskins have been out of it by week 13 or week 12. I mean, week 13, week 14. You know, 2004, when they went 6-10, they were out of it long before the, you know, second to last weekend of the season. Just wasn't into the game. I don't know what it was. I don't know whether I was frustrated from the team, you know, getting off of that quick start, or just, you know, the game really had no relevance. I wanted to see how they would compete. I didn't get into the game until, say, the last couple of plays. Philly's last drive, that's probably when I got into the game, when they were driving to try to tie the game. And, you know, of course, Lamont Landry and Fred Smoot were able to stop Reggie Brown from crossing the goal line to score the game-tying touchdown. But, again, if you're a Washington Redskins fan, good win. Philly has been playing well, scoring a lot of points. And it frustrates you that much more because you go out there and play a big game against a good Philadelphia team, yet you can't beat St. Louis and you can't beat Cincinnati. I mean, that has to drive a Redskins fan crazy. But, you know, it is what it is as far as the Redskins goes. The Redskins now, you know, probably going to, you know, look to the off season before they will have to. But of course, they will have a little bit of business at hand next tomorrow in San Francisco as they will take on the 49ers. I think they'll win the game tomorrow. Had they lost last week, I would have almost gave them no chance to win that game. Had they lost last week, I would have thought that they were completely in the tank, but I think there will be some motivation to finish 9-7, and they'll play hard. The one thing they have shown for Jim Zorn is that they will play for him, and they will. And listen, the 49ers are not the 89 49ers. I know the 49ers have played better. Mike Singletary looks like he's going to be the head coach in 2009. It looks like Mike Marks is going to be out as offensive coordinator. But the Redskins will play well, and I think we'll win the game. It'll be a good game. I mean, I don't think the 49ers can score against the Redskins, truthfully. The 49ers are a bad offensive team. I don't think they can put up enough points on the board myself. So I look for a 17-10, 14-10 type game, maybe a little bit more, maybe 17-13 Redskins. And I look for the Redskins to finish their season 9-7. And a couple of things to note. Number one, D'Angelo Hall is in contract negotiations with the Redskins, which leads you to believe that Sean Spring's days as the Washington Redskins are close to being finished. Makes perfect sense. Spring's has a big salary cap number next year at around at least $8.5 million. There's no way. Listen, if it were my team, even if he was willing to take a pay cut, I wouldn't want him back on the team. I mean, he's too injury prone. You know, you're talking about a guy who's 33, 34 years old. You know, his time is coming past. I mean, they're talking about moving him to free safety. I don't care where you. I don't care if you're moving the punter. The guy can't stay on the field. I mean, he can't stay healthy. What good is he to the team? So that's one. You also could see a move where possibly Fred Smoot is not on the team next year. I mean, he has a cap number of over $4 million, which is a big cap number considering for a backup cornerback. And Smoot right now is there clearly that number four. When you talk about, even if you get rid of Springs, I would say D'Angelo Hall, Carlos Rogers, Prince probably would be their number three. Would be their number three quarterback. And I think they're going to, just from a salary cap standpoint, which is, will probably move on with Fred Smoot, who has been okay this year. He hasn't been good. Hasn't been great. He's been pretty good. He's been pretty good, but that is a big cap number. So look for those couple of things. Look for those couple of moves to be made by the Washington Redskins as they wrap up their 2008 campaign. Listen, I told you before the season that the Redskins were going to be either 8-8 or 9-7. You would have to take it. I know the 6-2 start makes it a bit of pill to swallow, but the bottom line is they are not a big time. They are not a playoff team. Number one, and number two, they need an upgrade in talent. That's all there is to it. And we will get into that much more coming up next week as we wrap up the Redskins season and look ahead towards the off season for the Washington Redskins coming up. On the Saturday morning wake-up call, I have Star of the Year, also NBA Beat, and a couple of things to get to on this last edition of the Saturday morning wake-up call for 2008. That's coming up, and much, much more. 11 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour, after the update, I will have the Star of the Week. Randy Johnson signs a one-year deal with the San Francisco Giants. The 45-year-old left-hander is five wins shy of the milestone of 300 wins. Florida Atlantic defeats Central Michigan 24-21 in the Motor City Bowl. Three other bowl games coming on today. West Virginia takes on North Carolina in the Mike Car Care Bowl. Wisconsin takes on Florida State in the Champs Sports Bowl, and Miami takes on California in the Emerald Bowl. Jerry Jones says both Wade Phillips and Jason Garrett will be back next year as head coach and offensive coordinator for the Dallas Cowboys. Late NBA scores. Golden State defeats Boston 99-89. Boston falls to 27-4. Steven Jackson leads Golden State with 28 points. Miami defeats Chicago 90-77. Dwayne Wade leads Miami with 28 points. New Orleans snaps a two-game losing streak to defeat Houston and knocks off Houston 88-79. Chris Paul leads the way for the Hornets with 26 points and 10 assists. Other winners in the NBA include Memphis, Detroit, Minnesota, Utah, Denver, Toronto, and Charlotte. Still to come, of course, we will have our Star of the Year, a lot of big stars, but there only could be one Star of the Year.
Trying to cash his microphone check 212. Wanna believe my own hype, but it's 213. The world brought me to my knees. What if you brung you? Did you improve on the design? Did you do something new? What you naming on the guest list? Who brung you? You, the more famous person you come through, and the sexy lady next to you, you come too. And then the hitman standing outside of heaven waiting.
Star of the Year. There are three candidates, and of course, you say to yourself, well, after you narrow it down to three, well, listen, if you want to take every great performance, if you want to take every great performance or every great feat in 2008, there's not enough show. There would not be enough show to do those, to go through that. So to me, these three guys stood out, heads and shoulders above the rest. Number one, Michael Phelps. Of course, won a record 8 gold medals at the Beijing Olympics, at the Summer Games at Beijing. For his career, he has records of 14 career gold medals and also 16 total medals. Broke 7 world records in winning his 8 gold medals over the course, and was no question the star of the Summer Games in Beijing. Usain Bolt, number two. Broke the world records for both the 100 and 200 meters. Also broke the 4x100 relay record. He's the first man ever in Olympic history to set world records in all three events. And listen, the guy is only 22 years old. He didn't test positive for steroids, which was a positive for track and field. 22 years old, he's going to break some more. You have a feeling that he's going to break some more records. Has thought about running the 400 meters, and I'll be very interested to see if he can if he can dominate that the way he dominated the 100 and 200 meters. Rafael Nadal, this guy, of course, overtook Roger Federer as the world's number one tennis player. He won both the French Open and Wimbledon, becoming the first player since Bjorn Borg to win both in the same year. He gave two of the most dominating performances to me in tennis history. What he did to Roger Federer at the French Open, beating him in straight sets, I've never seen anybody dominate another number one player like that in any Grand Slam. And then he goes to Wimbledon and defeats Federer on his own, you know, in Federer's own backyard, basically, in Federer's tournament. Federer had won five straight years in one of the greatest and the best tennis match I've ever seen in my life. It was five sets, almost 5 hours of just great tennis. Tennis play at the highest level. Nadal would go on to win that match and claim his first Wimbledon championship. You look at what he did over the course of the season. I mean, 82-11, he won six titles, made it to at least the semifinals of every Grand Slam event. Started to wear down a little bit as the year went on, but that was more of a product of him playing so many matches. And for good measure, you know, he won a gold medal in Beijing. So probably have to give it to Michael Phelps. I mean, Michael Phelps, when you win eight gold medals, break Mark Spitzer's record that had been held, that had been ongoing for the last 36 years, and do what he did with all the pressure on you, everybody watching, he is our star of the year. He is our star of the year, no question. And, I mean, you could have went either way. I mean, you could have went with Nadal or Usain Bolt, but again, Michael Phelps had all the pressure on him. Had all the pressure on them, all the eyes of the world watching him. He's swimming races left and right. Pretty tough not to go with Michael Phelps to win this terms of this award. I mean, he really had a Olympics that would go down for a long, long time. Nobody will ever forget that those Olympic Games. And he's going to help put swimming on the map that much more with those performances. NBC is going to be covering. They're going to be covering championships or swimming championships that they've never covered before because of Michael Phelps. Coming up, we have NBA Beat. And also a couple of things to wrap up this program, a couple of stories of the week that we'll look at and focus on. That's coming up on a Saturday morning wake-up call. The call number is 347-215-6180. Again, 347-215-6180. The NBA Beat is brought to you by fans who do not want to watch basketball from 12 noon basically to 1 a.m. in the morning on Christmas Day. Way too many games for my liking. And I watched the Laker game and watched the last half of the last quarter of the Phoenix Suns San Antonio game, which was a great finish, of course, with Roger Mason Jr. hitting the game with a three. Listen, it lived up to the hype. Certainly lived up to the hype. L.A., Boston, the rematch, big game for the Lakers. They had a game that they absolutely had to have. I mean, listen, I know that the season is a marathon, 82 games, but for psychological purposes, the Lakers needed this game. They defeated the Celtics 92-83, and it turned out to be the highest-rated NBA regular season game in over 4 years. A lot of people chimed in to watch that game. I mean, they did what they had to do. I'm not going to go crazy and say the Lakers are now the favorites over the Celtics to win a championship because they're not. The Celtics are still the team to beat. But the Lakers, you know, gave you a taste of the potential. I mean, they can be a great defensive team when they decide to play defense. They have Celtics to 83 points. They can rebound. They can play tough. And they were clearly the more physical team in that game. As in comparison to the Boston Celtics, but again, I would not go too crazy with that particular game. The Lakers still got to go out there and play that consistent that consistently on the defensive end over the course of the rest of the season, which has about 50-some games left in the season. Boston, of course, apparently had some Laker hangover as they were going to lose to Golden State last night by 10 points, getting outscored by Golden State 60-38 in the second half. You look at the NBA standings, and this is how well Cleveland and LA has been playing. Boston goes on a 19-game winning streak, and they find themselves 27-2, best start in NBA history, lose two games in a row, and now they find themselves one game ahead of Cleveland and tied in the loss column. I mean, Cleveland is 25-4. They were able to survive a scare from the Washington Wizards, who played well on Christmas Day as they defeated them. But Boston right now, 27-4. Cleveland's 25-4, and the Lakers are just a game behind in the loss column at 24-5. I mean, that just shows you how well the Lakers and how well LA and Cleveland were playing in spite of Boston's just ridiculous winning streak at 19. Like I said, there are too many games. You cannot have five games on Christmas Day. I mean, it was ridiculous. It's too many games. I mean, New Orleans, the Washington Wizards Cleveland game was a joke. I know Washington played well, but come on, that game, it was hard to get into that game. New Orleans Orlando, New Orleans didn't even show up. New Orleans didn't show up at all. Dallas, Portland. Who in the world is watching a basketball game at 10:30 at night on Christmas Day? On Christmas night, you people are asleep or they're partying. Nobody's watching a basketball game at 10:30 at night. So on a Thursday night. So that NBA, just had the doubleheader. Phoenix, San Antonio was great. Phoenix, I mean, goodness, they can be San Antonio. Their lives depended on it. Roger Mason, how do you leave Roger Mason Jr. open? How do you double team Tony Parker in the lane and leave Roger Mason Jr., who is the third, statistically is the third, percentage wise, is the third best 3-point shooter in the league, wide open for a three? At worst, if even Tony Parker scores, I mean, you go into overtime. Just terrible defense on the part of the Phoenix Suns. A couple of things to note: the All Star votes came out. I mean, fans, I'm with you. I'm with you in terms of having the right to vote for the starters is the one thing that fans can control in the NBA. But, I mean, some of these votes are just ridiculous, especially in the Eastern Conference. All right, fine. Dwight Howard starting center, no problem with that. You have KG and LeBron starting forwards in the East, no problem with that. But with the guards, I mean, Dwayne Wade, fine. But you can't have Allen Iverson, Vince Carter over Ray Allen and Devin Harris. I mean, are you kidding me? Gilbert Arenas, you have Gilbert Arenas in the sixth spot over
Rajon Rondo, who's having an all-star caliber. Rajon Rondo, they just cracked the top 11. So this is a guy who's on a team who had the best start in NBA history, but yet cannot crack the top 11 in terms of all-star votes. How is Vince Carter and Allen Iverson going? I mean, you don't have both those guys second and third. I mean, if I had my vote, I would have Dwayne Wade. And probably either Wade or Rondo or Wade or Ray Allen. Gilbert Arenas should not be on this list. Gilbert Arenas is going to have to play this year. Fans, you got to have a clue. In the Western Conference, they did a pretty good job so far. Yao Ming starting center, Kobe Bryant starting 2 yards. You have Duncan and Mike Stoudemire forward. From behind Kobe Bryant, you have Tracy McGrady as the other starting guard over Chris Paul. Tracy McGrady over Chris Paul. I mean, there's no way you can have that. You can have Tracy McGrady, who's been in and out the lineup over Chris Paul, who has been by far and away the best point guard in the league, and is the best point guard. So the fans need to get there. The fans need to get together with some of their voting, or just take the fans voting away altogether. I mean, that's all there is to it. Couple things to get to before we head on out. Number one, of course, you had with the baseball, you had Mark Teixeira agree to an 8-year deal with Jose Cabral for the Yankees. And all right, listen, Red Sox fans. First of all, Red Sox fans need to calm down. Number one, if anybody thinks that it is a disappointing playing field, it's there's wealthy, just like Chris Rock said on the Comedy Special, there's rich and there's wealthy. The New York Yankees are wealthy, while everybody else might be rich. I mean, what they can do in terms of the money they can spend, it's just ridiculous. You know, the Yankees have committed, and I'm a Yankee fan. I mean, I'm going to give them a chance to vent a little bit. You are on the line.
I know you're talking about the Mark Teixeira deal.
You know I am.
I think it was a steal. And he didn't want to go to Boston. I think Boston overplayed their hand.
It didn't come down to where he wanted to go. It came down to the money. I mean, Boston offered him $200 million. He'd be in Boston. You know that. He's a Scott Boras client.
Yeah, but the way Boston, you know, they came at him was like, we're going to take our deal off the table if he don't accept. The Yankees always wanted that, you know, give us one more shot before you close a deal with anybody else. And that's what they said to Scott Boras. And Scott Boras, you know, he came to the Yankees and like...
Oh, I give the Yankees credit. I give the Yankees a lot of credit. They did. I mean, this is one thing about the Yankees, and George Steinbrenner has always been a stickler for this. You don't let them walk out of the room without signing a contract. You know, I talked about it last week with Atlanta and the whole Rafael Furcal scenario. They thought they had a deal with Furcal. Furcal goes, leaves the room with no deal. They probably had a verbal agreement. He leaves. Next thing you know, he's at LA. He's back with the Dodgers. No, you don't. That's just bad business. You don't ever let a guy walk out of a room. If you really want him that bad, walk out of a room without putting his name on a dotted line. The Yankees do that better than anybody. They're gonna get whoever they want to get. Not only because they had the money, but also because they know how to do business. So I give them credit from that standpoint. But to me, looking at baseball as a whole, it's not good for the sport when you have one team that commits like $400 million to contracts. Nobody ever comes close to the Yankees in terms of spending money. Not the Mets, not the Angels, not Boston, not Chicago Cubs, Dodgers, nobody. Nobody can come close to matching what they could do year in, year out. Yankees' payroll is going to be about $220 million. It's gonna be over $200 million. I know they lost $88 million because that came off the books, but that is almost about to be filled with contracts that they signed.
Came off the books, but only 53 is coming off.
62. Well, they got 62. They filled 62 of it of this year with the contracts that they've given out already. But you know, look, they don't. I mean, the guys still gotta go out there and prove it on the field. They still gotta go out there and prove that they can pitch in New York with Sabathia and Burnett, Teixeira hit in New York. I think the Burnett, you know, it was signed. Did they need Teixeira? Yeah, they could have used him. They needed another bat. But every year they come out, just about every other year when the big free agents come out, you know who's going to get them. It's going to be the Yankees, Mets, and a couple of teams. And for the sport as a whole, it's not good for baseball.
I mean, but you can't fault the Yankees for playing by the rules. I mean, they paid them.
I can't fault the Yankees for that. They do great business. They generate revenue. They are, you know, they're one of the most valuable franchises in sports. No, I don't fault the Yankees at all. But I'm about to wrap this up, man. Thanks for the call.
Oh, no problem, man.
All right, take it easy.
All right, dude.
No, I mean, I don't blame the Yankees at all for doing, you know, that's what they do, what they do. I mean, they play by the rules. They're not doing nothing illegal, nothing against the rules. So it is what it is. It's not good for the sport. That's the one thing. It is absolutely not good for the sport. And baseball has to do something. I mean, I think baseball should have a salary cap, you know, have it at max out at $100 million and have the basement be at $50 million. Well, that's going to wrap it up for today's edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Hope you enjoyed the program. Tune in next week for the first edition of the 2009 Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We're going to wrap it up with a little Solomon Burke. Have a happy new year and have a great rest of the holidays. I'll see you next year.
Keep on moving.
want you to sound of the week. Let me down in your heart. Do you really know what I feel?